And welcome back. One of the most important movements, literal and figurative, of the last century was the Great Migration of African Americans from South to North. Our next guest is Georgetown University history professor Dr. Marcia Chatelain. She has written about it in her new book, Southside Girls. She has been active recently using the past and the migration and the present, specifically the Ferguson story, and how they inform the African American experience then and now. Dr. Chatelain, a Mizzou grad, by the way, employs the Twitter hashtag Ferguson Syllabus to curate information to use to teach about Ferguson. She joins me in studio. We spoke in August. Now, so nice to have you with us, Dr. Chatelain. We spoke in August, but by phone. Nice to have you with us.
Good to be here.
You know, I'd like to certainly talk about your book, but I'd like to see if you can draw any parallels between the South Side Girls that you write about and Ferguson.
Absolutely. So Southside Girls is about the impact that the Great Migration had on young women and girls and their ability to find their place in a very changing and rapidly evolving world. And I think that what we see in Ferguson are the consequences of that mass migration of African Americans into places that had very few, the consequences of housing, segregation in education. And I think that Ferguson is the legacy, the negative legacy of mass migration and communities not willing to really be open to newcomers.
Because mass migration in many cases led to white flight.
Yes.
And hence Ferguson and places like that here and other parts of the country in the North.
Absolutely. And it also contributed to African-American institution building. There's no civil rights movement without the critical mass of Northern African-Americans working with people in the South as well. And so I think that the Great Migration is so rich because there's so many different types of experiences and so many lenses we have yet to examine.
Right. You've spent a lot of time thinking and talking and teaching about Ferguson. What has the response to your students at Georgetown been?
My Georgetown students are amazing. They not only wanted to engage in the issues surrounding Ferguson, but they were also so reflective about their own experiences, what they learned about race, what they've learned about making a difference. I had a group of students last semester travel to Ferguson. At Georgetown University, we have kept the conversation going. We don't go a month, we don't go a week without some type of organized activity to think about the problems of Ferguson as reflective of the responsibility of all people.
Keeping the conversation going is something we have talked about so much on this program, and you hear a lot of mention of, quote, the conversations. Do you have a sense, and I ask this question to all of our guests on this subject, do you have a sense that this is different this time? The reaction to Ferguson is different than Trayvon Martin or countless examples we can give of similar situations.
Well, I think that the difference is that the trauma of the community has been front and center in this movement. Trayvon Martin was killed at night and someone took his body away, but the terror of what the people of Ferguson witnessed that day, it stayed with them, and I think it fueled this movement. And I also think that what we're seeing is the outgrowth of what happens when a critical mass of young people learns from the mistakes of the past, and they're building a movement around all of the lessons. And so I think that while there's a lot of pain in this moment, there's so much to be hopeful for because we have tremendous young people fighting a new battle.
Young people really hold the key, as they have so often in the past when it comes to change.
Yes, young people reflect our greatest desires of hope. In my book, what I talk about a lot is how these young African American girls represented so much hope that families had that a new start in the North would bring all sorts of possibilities. And at the same time, the disappointments of life in the North were also things that girls had to contend with and carry.
People who are not totally familiar with that part of our history, and this migration took part during most of the last century, mm-hmm. from the early part of the century, certainly through the middle part of it, they may not understand why there was a migration. Why was there?
Well, the conditions in the South for the average African American were unbearable and intolerable. So we have the rise of Klan violence. We have incredibly depressed wages. We have all sorts of labor conflicts. And we also have the confinement of the person. And so Northern migration was an opportunity to try to see what it would be like to live as a free person. And so it is, in a sense, what they call the civil rights movement as the second Reconstruction. It was the first time for many African Americans that they could actually make a choice about what they wanted their lives to look like.
How have the textbooks treated this part of our history?
Well, I think some of the textbooks have done a good job, and some of my colleagues have done a good job, but we haven't heard the stories of girls and young women. And so in entering the conversation about the Great Migration, I wanted to really think, how did this change the life of girls? How did it change the way families looked at their daughters? And what was made possible through the Great Migration that allowed us to see the courage of girls and young women in the civil rights movement?
You know, it occurs to me that many of the people we have spoken with regard to the Ferguson situation, and who have been active throughout, are young women.
Yes, absolutely.
What is that telling you?
Well, it tells us something that we've always known, but maybe not recognized, that in every movement, even if the leadership, the people out front are male, we know that there's a critical mass of girls, young women, and women who are not only sustaining the movement through their work, but sustaining the communities that are shattered by violence. And so one of the things that is important to me is to remember that the problems of police brutality and violence in communities is not just about young men. It's about the girls and the young women who are left behind to pick up the pieces and to make the movement strong.
But what do they bring to the table that's different?
I think that in a lot of families still, we have so much gendered socialization that at the very least, they bring the ability to multitask. They bring the ability to know different aspects of their community because they are often made responsible for work inside and outside of the home. And like the girls in my book, they have a lot of responsibility at a young age. And boy, do they leverage that to make a difference.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but we do have some people who want to get into this discussion. So let's bring them in. We'll start with Tina, who is calling from Maplewood. Tina, thank you for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I would like your guest to clarify what she said about African Americans moving into a neighborhood where people have not welcomed them.
Yes.
If I have a comment about that.
Well, I think that what we see throughout the period of mass migration is that we see, deeper lines being drawn across races because of this larger group. And so we see white flight very early. We see blockbusting. We see all sorts of housing policies that are designed to maintain segregation.
Because I think that in Ferguson, a lot of people might disagree with you.
Ma'am, my book is about Great Migration cities, and so while Ferguson is a very pertinent mm-hmm. topic, I'm talking about places like Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh,
okay.
places that saw a critical mass of migration.
Okay. Well, let me just point out that from talking to people, here in St. Louis, and people from that area, it seems as though it's the police department and some of the city officials, not everybody in the police department, but several people in the police department that are not from that area that, might be from outside of St. Louis, maybe, some of the small towns that really don't understand the people that live there very well. And I think that right now that's the conflict.
Thank you for the call. Let's get a response.
Well, I think that in all communities, we have this real question about where does the police force come from? Does it reflect the people inside the community? And where does the leadership land? And so I would hate to dichotomize a police force and say, well, some local people get it and some people from the outside don't get it. I think the critical issue is how do you build trust within all communities, regardless of where you're coming from?
You know, it's very hard to get away from Ferguson when you're discussing anything that has to do with civil rights these days. And I think that you're going to be running into that. Your book is relatively new. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, I think I've wanted to have a conversation about Ferguson mm-hmm. as a historian because I think that my discipline has the keys to understanding it better. But I think that at the very least, I think any conversation that talks about a contemporary issue and uses history as a tool is a great conversation. So if my book is a wonderful entry point for people to understand Ferguson and the consequences of migration better, then I'm really happy to be part of that.
So why Chicago? Why did you focus on Chicago?
Well, I think it's a great city. No offense to locals here. It's actually where I'm from, and Chicago has an incredible history of institution building across all racial lines, has great record keeping as a result of the Chicago Fire. People learned how to keep things fireproof. But more than anything else, Chicago really was the center for mass migration because of the work of the Chicago Defender newspaper and the growth of African-American businesses and political and religious leaders.
So source material was abundant in Chicago.
It's the life of the historian.
You're here tonight for an event at the History Museum, and I mentioned that you were a Mizzou grad, but you also have some association with the Sue Scheer Institute at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, and that's why you're here tonight, correct?
Yes, the Sue Scheer Institute for Women in Public Life is an excellent program that helps undergraduates understand the importance of public service and works with women throughout this area to make sure that they know that the political process should be something that's accessible to them and that they should really invest in, because women's leadership is really a place that we still struggle with across the country.
There really seems to be a great movement now. More women do seem to be getting involved. We see that in the national and local levels. That has to make you happy.
It makes me very happy. And what it says also is that we're not only breaking down gender barriers, but the structure of the family is changing, in which women at a younger age can enter political life.
And your basic message tonight will be, if you can summarize it in 15 seconds?
Girls' lives matter, and we need to really invest in understanding girls' history.
And that's going to be happening at the St. Louis, Missouri History Museum at 7 o'clock tonight. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, Professor Marcia Chatelain, thank you so much for being with us. Great to talk to you in person. And I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful event tonight.
Thank you.
And the book, once again, is Southside Girls. It's available where all good books are sold, as they say.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. We have to say goodbye for now. We'll be back on Monday, but join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape. He'll be here to bring you up to date on arts and culture and entertainment news. I'm Don Marsh. Thanks for being with us. Have a good day.